Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Foreign Correspondents Club Hong Kong. My name is Carsten Schell. I'm a member of the board of the FCC and a photographer in daily life. And it's my great pleasure to welcome you here tonight. Let me just go through a few announcements. At first, please, if you could... If you haven't done it yet, turn down your phone on silence so we're not being disturbed while we watch the film. And as you know, at the FCC, we always have a whole bunch of interesting events lined up. So again, this month, following tomorrow for lunch, we have Vali Nasser to speak about the Arab Spring. That is getting close to full, so in case you want to join tomorrow, then be quick, because the seats, I think, going quite fast. Following next week, we get an interesting presentation on the history of the early meteorology in Hong Kong, colonial Hong Kong, by Kevin McCown of Hong Kong University. Followed by, that's on Monday the 21st for lunch. And then on Tuesday the 22nd, we have Dr. Ren Zhongzhe from, a former Chinese diplomat. Actually, he was posted to Washington, D.C. until 2011, so recently become... become a fellow of the China Institute of International Studies, but he's going to talk about the world and Chinese diplomacy in 2013. So that's going to be a very, very interesting talk, I think. Followed on the Wednesday next week by going quietly cuckoo on a Chinese mountain. Mark Kitto, a Westerner who came to China, had a successful business there, which eventually... failed, and then his resurgence in a different capacity, and still in China. So that's going to be very interesting as well. So I hope I've enticed you a little bit of with our upcoming events. And coming to the film tonight, Agent Orange, A Personal Requiem by Masako Sakata. An internationally acclaimed film that we're going to watch, and Ms. Sakata is going to be available for question and a little address after the film. So I'll hope, well, it's going to be an interesting showing, so we'll see each other afterwards. Thank you.
The gentlest protest song I know. It doesn't protest gently, but it sounds gentle. It's called What Have They Done to the Rain? Just a little rain falling all around. The grass lifts its head to the just a little rain, just a little rain. What have they done to the rain? Just a little boy standing in the rain, the gentle rain that falls for years, and the grass is gone, the boy disappears, and rain keeps falling like helpless tears. And what have they done to the rain? Just a little breeze.
Vậy thì coi như là năm sáu một lên sáu tư từ tuần bảy hai á, nó coi như mấy mấy anh xã là thuộc cái bùi gì không biết, mà trọng có không có, rồi là đánh nhau, rồi là mình xung hầm, rồi là bối là một cái cái mắt cái mùi rượu chạy đặt mắt ông như đương cái xã chứ cả. Rồi ra cái chất chi đó là có gì không có trọng có, mà cái cuối đó là trôi trốc hết, là cái cuối mà phục khui là năm bảy ba đến chứ.
And what have they done to the rain? And what have they done to the rain?
It is late April, the most beautiful season in Japan. The cherry trees at our home in the mountains must be in full bloom. But instead, Greg lies in a hospital in Tokyo. He was admitted 10 days earlier, complaining of persistent stomach pain.
Everything is okay. I'd like to see you, have a couple beers, have a long chat. Yeah.
His condition deteriorated quickly, and the doctor's prognosis was that he had less than a week. I could not tell him that he had only a short time to live. I did not want him to live without hope for the remaining few days. He passed away on May 4th. The diagnosis was liver cancer. It all happened so quickly. I could not figure out what was going on. Greg had always been strong, healthy, and active. His sudden death left me lost. My life ahead alone seemed so long and meaningless. Greg and I met in Kyoto in 1970. It was a time of student unrest and change was in the air. I was a student at Kyoto University and Greg had come to Japan after serving in Vietnam for 3 years.
At 18, I fled suburbia, tripping into the dusty, corrupting enlightenment of the bloody Vietnam War, never to return. Liberated, I enthusiastically abandoned my previous lives. I have, metaphorically, ever since floated through time, present, past, and future. I became an exile.
I was working all over Vietnam, from Da Nang to Saigon, everywhere, Pleiku, Da Trang. During Tet of 68, I was in Da Nang Way area. We were overrun by the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong for 3 days. I think that was the most dangerous situation. A lot of people were killed.
Greg had gone back to America briefly after his duty ended, but he was deeply disappointed and hurt by how he was received by the American people and decided that he did not belong there.
The first things that happened was I went to San Francisco Airport. That's where you got out from the military, said somewhere in San Francisco. Not the airport, but... And then somebody yelled something like baby killer, threw a Coke at me, which is interesting because they threw a Coke at me because that is the symbol of capitalism. I suppose they were right to a certain degree because obviously the Vietnam War babies did die and if you were there, you were part and parcel of it. Nevertheless, I never personally did anything like that. But then I was assaulted not physically, but intellectually, by various people, such as people who would say, "Out of the Korean War, you guys didn't do enough. You should have killed those commie bastards, you hippie, commie, pink old bastard." And when you sit there and try to explain them the realities, they wouldn't listen because I was only 21. I still had to show an ID to drink a beer because I looked young for my age. And then I would have the other side say it was a baby kill. And nobody would listen to you because you had no credentials other than having had the experience. And nobody would listen to somebody who had the experience. So it was very frustrating.
Soon after we met, Greg told me that we could not have children because he had been exposed to defoliants in Vietnam. But I did not give it much thought. After all, having a family was not foremost in our minds at the time, and the notion of exposure to defoliants was not real to me, a young student living in peaceful post-war Japan. It was nothing more than headlines in the newspapers. Aside from that first time, his exposure to defoliants never came up again between us. In fact, he was very reluctant to talk about his experiences in Vietnam. As time passed, I became more aware of the deep scars the Vietnam War had left on Greg. This made him strongly anti-war and anti-authority, convictions that guided him throughout his career as a photojournalist. He covered Asia primarily for many international magazines, including Time, for which he was a contract photographer for over 10 years. In the early 80s, he was one of the first photographers to return to post-war Vietnam. He went back to Vietnam at every opportunity, as if he was trying to get something out of his system by immersing himself in the country that had transformed him from a naive and innocent middle-class American teenager into a man, introspective and free of the confines of his native country, its culture and prejudices. He truly loved Vietnam. Philip Jones Griffith is a photographer whose book Vietnam Ink, published in 1971, exerted a profound influence on the anti-Vietnam War movement. He was a colleague of Greg's for 25 years. They traveled together on many photo assignments in Southeast Asia. He was the first one to point out to me that Greg's illness was likely related to his exposure to Agent Orange.
I first met Greg Davis in the late 70s, probably 77, I think, in South Korea. And I remember thinking, wow, what an amazingly different sort of American, because unlike most photojournalists he would be, who stay in the best hotel, you know, he was sort of very happy to be staying in a little Korean hotel, sleeping on the floor. And as I got to know him, I realized here was a born anarchist, in the best possible meaning of that word, anarchist. He believed nothing he was told. He automatically looked behind the facade. He automatically questioned everything. And I thought, wow, this chap is really interesting.
You know, I think everybody, when we said, like on, what was it, September 14th, we said democracy is dead. It is dead, because information is a lie, like burqas. They never wore burqas except during Taliban, that's bullshit. They never flew kites, they never wore makeup, that's all of a sudden. And today, our interpreter was saying he had a TV during the Taliban time. You see, the thing is, it's not what politicians say, the military commanders say, or Bush says.
That's about the
it's what our driver says, it's what the guards say. It's what our interpreter says, and it's what people on the street say. And they would tell you what is happening. And you just go through border checkpoints and you discover it yourself.
Now, he didn't talk much about his past. He was conscripted into the army at a relatively early age, came to Vietnam, realized immediately that it didn't make sense. There was something very wrong about what America was doing there. He told me that very often he was sprayed because the amount of spraying was very heavy in that part of the country. And he mentioned this in context of why he never had any children with his wife, Masako. He explained that he knew he'd been sprayed so often, having children was just too much of a risk. It was tragic that, you know, at an early age, 54 years old, his liver explodes.
Unable to cope with Greg's sudden disappearance from my life, I needed to find out why he had to die so early.
If Indochina goes, several things happen right away. The Krop Peninsula, the last little bit of end hanging on down there, would be scarcely defensible. The tin and the tungsten that we so greatly value from that area would cease coming. So when the United States votes $400 million to help that war, we're not voting for a giveaway program. We're voting for the cheapest way that we can prevent the occurrence of something that would be of the most terrible significance to the United States of America, our security.
In the 1950s, the American government began increasing its involvement in the war in Indochina. As the revolutionary movement intensified in South Vietnam, the American government started to use defoliants in the battle zones. The first spraying of chemicals was carried out in August 1961 on the northern side of Kon Tum along National Highway 14, destroying mountain vegetation and agricultural fields. Within 2 hours, all plants sprayed, withered, and died. The test was considered a great success. This program, originally called Operation Hades, had two aims: to defoliate the trees to facilitate surveillance and to destroy crops in order to cut off the guerrillas' food supply at the source. The spraying of defoliants continued for 10 years, during which time some 19 million gallons of defoliants were dispersed on 12% of the territory of South Vietnam. Of this total, 12 million gallons were Agent Orange. It was called Agent Orange because of the orange band painted on the dram cans. The defoliant contained dioxin, the most toxic chemical ever invented by humans. The idea of making a documentary on Agent Orange came to me a few months after Greg's death. I started to read many books on the subject and was startled to find out that many American and Vietnamese veterans of the Vietnam War were suffering from symptoms similar to Greg's. Going through the photos of our happy times, I came across some snapshots that I had forgotten about. These were pictures Greg took while he was in Vietnam as a soldier. He had shown them to me before, but I remember wondering why he thought them important. Now they meant more to me. But how was I going to find out anything more about them more than 30 years after they were shot? I remembered Greg had told me recently of a surprise phone call from his buddy during the Vietnam War, Mark Landgren, who had lived near us in Kyoto for several years in the 70s and now lived somewhere in the US. I looked up his phone number and called an Oregon number. I was not sure it would still be in use, but I reached him. When I showed him the photos, he immediately confirmed that they were of the base in Lone Town, where Greg was stationed from late 1969 to April of 1970.
So I was there a month after he left. But when I was there, I looked around, and that was enough for me.
What did it look
like? It was like if his table was all wood, rubber plantations, and just trees and jungle. Mm-hmm. He was long time right there. Yeah. And all the way around it, there was just nothing growing.
No more.
And it was just dirt road in, dirt road out. Mm-hmm.
Mark was also sent to the base, but could not bear the sight of it, and he trekked back to Saigon the next day. He was sure that the area was sprayed with Agent Orange. I had visited Vietnam with Greg a number of times in the 80s. Stories he had told me in passing back then now came flooding back to mind. I wanted to see for myself the places where he had experienced the war. In July 2004, I asked Philip to accompany me on a trip to Vietnam. He had recently published a book on Agent Orange, and he continues to be deeply concerned about the after effects of Agent Orange 30 years after the war ended. I had no idea what to expect on our Vietnam trip. I thought we would have to look for Agent Orange victims in the corners and nooks of the countryside in Vietnam. Instead, I found they were everywhere, so immediate and present in the countryside as well as in the cities. In some villages, you could hear their moans just walking down the lanes. Elsewhere, victims were living in households nearly side by side. One of the goals of our trip was to find the site of the base where Greg was likely exposed to Agent Orange. Long Tan is located near Bien Hoa, which was a major US base during the war. Arriving in the area, I asked around, showing the pictures to older people who might remember. Finally, we came across Pham Van Hoa, who could take us to the spot. The area is now used by the Vietnamese military. Trees have been planted, and the area, once so desolate, is now green. But the dioxin contained in Agent Orange penetrated deep into the soil, cells, and molecules. I was suddenly surrounded by its legacy. The Bien Hoa area remains one of the hottest spots for dioxin contamination today. The Long Tan district has a population of 230,000, of whom some 1,000 children and adults suffer the after effects of defoliants.
Cái mùi nó thô đó. Nó thơm cái hành cái trái ổi mà chín á. Giải thuốc là mình cái bay chứ nó nghe nó ù ù trên trời lúc mà mình cũng không có thấy cái bay nó cũng ù ù ở trên đó. Nhưng mà vô là nghe cái mùi đó là y như trái mùi ổi chín. Nó thơm vậy đó. Nó không cái mùi cái dạng như tôi hồi xanh này cha đó là nhiều bị lắm. Có đứa hai sinh sống không có. Có đứa hai mắt mù luôn.
The Thu Du Hospital in Ho Chi Minh City is one of Vietnam's major maternity hospitals. It is crowded with happy, expectant mothers and families taking their newborn babies home. But the hospital is also home to a facility called the Peace Village. Here, there are more than 100 children suffering a range of dioxin-related disabilities.
Since 65 to 69, I was a student working in this hospital. So that time, I was surprised about the increased incidence of those malformations and diseases. But I didn't know what was the cause. But after 75, when the veterans group, American veterans group, came here, and then other time only, I realized that there was some problems with the human health because of the spraying of toxic chemical substances during wartime in Vietnam. We sent the samples of blood or the adipose tissue of our patients with cancer, the patients with deformed babies, to Canada, to West Germany. Very surprised result. That showed that dioxin level in their body is much, much higher than in the north of Vietnam, yeah, or in the other region that haven't been exposed to Agent Orange or dioxin. The breast milk dioxin level in breast milk up to 1,450 ppt parts per trillion. It is very high, the highest level in the human being since the beginning of the dioxin history.
Small children that I see in the, this village, so they are being born now, and the mothers were not necessarily exposed, but maybe their grandparents.
It means that their mother or their father may be exposed to dioxin through the breastfeeding.
It's the third generation.
Yeah, the third generation. In Vietnam, for many years already, especially in the south, we teach the young doctors and doctors in the midwives to do the ultrasound exam to teach them how to detect very early the congenital malformations of the fetus so that we can remove them out of the uterus before birth, so that we can avoid the birth of many deformed babies and children that we have to take care of. And it's really a burden for our society as well as for their family.
Nguyen Hon Loi was born in 1987. His parents lived in Thai Ninh, an area that was heavily sprayed. He was born at Thu Su Hospital and has lived here since he was 6 or 7. His parents were too poor to take care of him at home. Pham Thi Thuy Linh was born in 1994 in Ho Chi Minh City. Her grandfather was an army officer under the former regime and worked on aircraft that carried and dispersed Agent Orange during the war. Mr. Nishimura, a volunteer from Kobe, teaches the children Japanese.
Minare.
Hi, Minare.
Hi, Minare.
Hi,
Minare. Hi, Minare. Hi, Minare. Hi,
Minare.
Hi, Minare. Hi, Minare. Hi, Minare. Hi, Minare. Hi, Minare. Hi, Minare. Hi,
very difficult, but they are very cheerful. They don't know. And sometimes I feel very bad for them, very pity. And sometimes I cry for them. It's they really don't know about their future. And they are very cheerful.
A variety of tests were also conducted in several localities near Saigon. Near Long Tan, a roadside was treated with dinoxol sprayed from a buffalo turban mounted on a 2.5-ton truck. Results were considered fair to excellent. Those chemicals already proven most effective as defoliants will continue to be used until faster-acting types can be developed. It should be noted that the chemicals, when used appropriately, are harmless to man and do not render the soil unfruitful beyond one agricultural season. Defoliant operations are continuing on a daily basis in the Republic of Vietnam. Targets are vegetation along lines of communication, roads, canals, power lines, and railroads. The number of ambushes in sprayed areas has dropped to practically zero. Military worth has thus been established.
Professor Jim Miga-Stellman at Columbia University has produced maps based on military flight records of when and where the defoliants were dispersed between 1963 and 1970. Dr. Stellman estimates that as many as 4 million Vietnamese were exposed to the defoliants. The central highland of Vietnam is an area where the spraying was especially intense. Quang Tri province is one of the poorest in Vietnam, and Cam Nghia is one of its poorest villages. It lies along Route 9, one of the main supply routes during the war and the target of spraying. Philip calls it the village of the damned.
About 97 or 98, a friend of mine came across a village in central Vietnam, which had the highest percentage of deformed children. The water that came down from the mountains to the east side of the Ashau Valley ran down streams and rivers into the Cam Nghia area, which is another reason why it was heavily contaminated. The actual spraying maps show the way in which Cam Nghia was sprayed regularly. All of those reasons means that the people in Cam Nghia were well and truly doused with Agent Orange during the war.
The poverty of the village is immediately apparent. We visited huts where often children with different disabilities and deformities lie on the dirt floor.
Nhân số ở đây là 5.000, đến thời điểm chơi là 5.673. Đây là số trẻ em từ 0 đến 16 tuổi đó, 0 đến 18 tuổi đó, là 158 người tàn tật. Thì từ khi sinh sau năm 80 thì có những cái đứa trẻ ra đời thì người ta nghĩ ngay là họ cũng không biết đó là bị ảnh hưởng chất độc màu da cam, mà người ta nghĩ là do di truyền hoặc là như thế nào đó là bị tàn tật. Nhưng mà hơn nữa là từ những cái thông tin đó thì mình cũng nghĩ là những cái trẻ em tàn tật mà trên Cam Nghĩa ở đây thì một phần nào cũng do là chiến tranh hoặc là chất độc màu da cam.
Giỏi ui, giỏi dữ à. Đúng gì giỏi. Cảm ơn ông đi. Thả tay xuống tay sơ bộ. Tôi xin hẳn là sau 2 của tàu bay thả. Thì khi mà hẳn mới 1 tuổi thì trà chữ kiểu đây cái sật cỏ đó là cứ bo trưa rứ. Mà cô nở là mịt đó là chết hết rồi. Mà hồi nở thì miệng là khâu thế. Cái cây cối hẳn thả thuộc xuống rồi rùi đi rồi hẳn nứt cái chôi lên là miệng hải ăn. Ở đây thì khi ở đây thì buổi sáng là một chiếc chí tàu bay của Mỹ lên là thả rê, rồi là khỏi mũ, rồi là vì gì vô gia ở đến sáng ngày mai, sáng ngày kia, rồi là có gì cưới cái cổ gì là thèo hết. Trên là có người kia thế này đi, trên lá là hắn kêu như cái giờ anh con chí ạ. Kêu như giờ anh con chí ạ. Nhưng sau 1-2-3 ngày ấy, là có gì hết kêu như rượu. Cái con chuột con đôi chứ là cái mình rửa mình dám nữa dám lâu lắm mình mơ mắt bữa bà hàn mỹ đâu có hỏi hồ nói đi đấy họ với gia quán xóm đi con mới xin mấy ngày mơ mắt bố tôi là tôi rửa chú thầy xin con mà đi ra hỏi hồ thì có được mấy ngày mơ mắt đấy mình dám rửa mình dám nữa có 2 tuần mà bắt đầu mình mở lần là rửa mình kêu rửa ra cái tập này một tập riêng cái đấy là nằm ngã thôi, bất tập là tập ngồi nè, đóng cái ghế tập ngồi xong rồi nó lại là tập giác hẳn đi.
Từ ngày tập đến giờ là thấy khá lắm.
Mình nên có tiền triển chín đôn, có tiền triển đấy, đi về chỗ quậy giác đi, nhưng mà giác cho nó tập trường, đừng chơi đi, quản giỏi trường, đi quản mù kẹo, đi về chỗ ra ngoài quản mù kẹo, hẳn lệ trang ngoài đường là dòm, chứ rửa lớn đi ra, lệ trang ngoài đường là dòm. Đó nhóm đây nữa. Đi, đừng dừng mà đi. Đúng không? Đừng dừng mà đi con.
Đi ra tập được ngoài trái này là chủ đá chủ lấy kéo lắm.
Bảo được ngã con. Đi ngoài sông con đi. Bờn đá ngoài sông con đi ra ngoài sông. Đi. Đi ra ngoài sông con. Đi ra ngoài sông. Phục vụ chức năng đi. Phục vụ chức năng. Bên gì tốt kéo đi. Đi.
Lũ được không?
chứ chỗ là có kinh tế để mà ta phục hồi chức năng cải tạo để đi ngoài đời mẹ ra bớt quá khổ ấy.
Là một trong những xã là có những cái lượng trẻ em tan tích quá nhiều nên bởi vì lớp trẻ giống như người ta mới xây dựng gia đình á, họ rất là họ rất là sợ cái thứ nhất là sợ giống như là họ có thể sinh con là biết đâu được là một họ là một trong những người mà gặp những cái hoàn cảnh sẽ sinh ra những cái đứa con giống như trẻ em tan tật ở ngay địa phương.
In the towns and villages of Quanchi and across the former demilitarized zone, I was to encounter many more families, sometimes with more than one child with disabilities and deformities.
Như bạn mỗi lần mà viên chuyện ai đó cũng viên.
As I witnessed family after family struggling with the burden of caring for these children, I was moved by the love and compassion that I saw, and it was a healing experience for me.
Ôi là ôi, thật, mù mắt thì đi mổ, đi mổ máu thì đi đâu đi không được, thả không được.
In Vietnam, I witnessed people with extraordinary deformities and handicaps, yet living a full life, calmly accepting fate. What they are asking for is not revenge, but practical and specific help.
Sau khi vào bộ đội thì như vậy là năm 80 là bắt đầu qua ở bên Lào thì đánh với quân Phỉ Phàng Pao, thì trong đó là có một trận đánh.
Trận thứ hai là năm 92 đó. 92 là nghĩa là mua hai chảo một ngày và sáu bữa.
Rồi là phải nói chung là sinh hoạt của cháu nó không biết gì nữa nên hẳn thì chuẩn bị là chơi cháu đồng kính lên kính là chuyên môn kính môn tiểu về đại.
A father whose son has been bedridden for 18 years asks only for a wheelchair so that he can sit in the garden and look around. It costs $50, which is beyond the family's means.
Dạ vâng, mình đã
làm vậy. Trước ngày thì bố ở nhà thì bố cõng nhau mà không, em mình nhà cũng cứ cố cõng nó ra. Mà không có bế chặt cái này, nó ôm chặt cổ mình, là đẻ mà không biết.
Chang Kan Lin is 4 years old. Her grandfather fought in the South as a North Vietnamese soldier. She is not expected to live beyond 10 years old. The town of Quan Chi is where some of the fiercest fighting took place in 1974. Our guide, Juan, who helped us arrange visits to the victims' homes, said, "Now we will go to the house of the boy with two heads." I did not know what to expect. 10-year-old Hua is an older sister of this two-headed boy. Her parents say she has difficulty learning, which may also have been caused by Agent Orange. Xuan, an 8-year-old boy with a heavy deformity, is the one we came to meet. Though indeed very heavily handicapped, I did not find him atrocious looking.
Chắc chắn là bị gia lai cũng tốt. Bởi vì đợt nữa là em đi làm rừng nữa. Đi khi chuẩn bị ra quân nữa. Là có lên làm rừng một hai tháng để ra quân. Là hồi nãy em một rừng để mà xảy gỗ nữa. Có những khi nữa là có khả năng bị đoàn đoàn đó là bởi vì chứ đi thì đông. Đi thì đông nhưng mà số em đã là thường thường họ làm ngoài thôi. Làm ngoài xá nữa. Nhưng mà tôi hai tháng tôi có thêm địa bàn nữa. Nên tôi được bạn là đi vô rừng để mà cứa xả nó vô rừng sâu thì chứ thằng TV là cũng chết hết rồi.
Chết rồi?
Chết rồi.
Chết vì lý do gì?
Thì chết thì nó đau bệnh nữa rồi chết thôi chứ mình không biết là bị cái chi. Nhưng mà thằng là chết rồi. Chỉ còn là một mình em thôi. Là hai thằng mà được vô rừng sâu nữa.
Xuyên's father, Do Duc, 36, is a farmer. He makes about $200 a year growing rice on his 200 square meter land. He has three children with his wife, Won. The eldest daughter, Hien, 12, helps him with his farm work full time because her mother takes care of Xuan around the clock. Now she's helping her father prepare rice for sowing the following day. Do Duc works as a laborer between the two rice harvests to earn extra money. The pigs and ducks he raises earn him $10 a month, but life is never easy.
Con báo cũng là chứ. Chúng sâu cũng là sẹp, để báo cái sẹp mới sẹp luôn.
Especially after watching the loving care the family gives Yuan, I started to feel very close to him too. He smiles, and the way he responds to his mother's attention made me think what a handsome boy he would have been had he been born without deformity.
Thank you.
Dạ, cùng sinh viên, cùng sinh tài, cùng trở thành luôn mà đều sinh viên ra thì có như là cùng đồng xã trở thành mà đều sinh ra là có cái cô đơn là cô mới ra trường á. Cô thấy là rồi cô đi kêu cái anh mà trạm trưởng đến đó, cô thấy bị tật chứ rửa. Và sau là kiểu bọc về nhà nuôi rồi cho con tết mẹ đó. Cũng cháu là chị thấy cháu nữa. Thì cháu cái kiểu kèm như rồi đó, rồi chị xíu ấp. Và em mới đem về nhà là có gì nồi ngoài tập trung lại nuôi tại nhà. Nuôi cháu tại nhà là con chị nằm lại tại trong xã. Trong một tuần nữa, khi nào mình về nhà được, mình biết là cháu gì đi. Cho con cũng cho thấy. Khi nào là lúc lại, viên kiểm cháu lại là mong về nhà thôi. Khi nào chị về nhà thấy thì có chị xíu ấy. Cách hai ngày chị mới tịnh dậy nữa.
Xỉu
luôn, thật xỉu luôn ạ. Không ăn không uống gì hết. Là có gì năm rồi là thấy con nói, chúng mình nói ra mà sinh thằng cũ ra mà giống cái con quỳ chí ạ. Thì cảm giác của chị thì nói giống cái trời, giống cái thọ đình cho số phần của ai vợ chồng rồi thì có gì cũng chịu thôi đấy.
Nhưng mà
bạn cố gắng là nuôi nuôi cháu để có gì để bằng các đứa trẻ khác. Vì con mình sinh ra thì mình có trách nhiệm để mà nuôi cháu chứ.
Nhưng ông cũng phụ lòng người hơn. Đang trẻ nào đi đánh nắng. Ôi đẹp quá. Sau này có bóng hoa và nón nữa.
Liêu. Ngày thứ hai là họ tới thăm một chó mô cục quên đồ sữa. Tôi cho uống tới mấy lúc khi nên tôi cho uống tới hết. Mà khi nên uống rất mệt. Em biết lần đầu lần uống ngay có ngày thứ hai là uống được nửa ly nữa rồi. Có ngày thứ ba là tứ rồi trở lên là chúng là ăn uống luôn rồi chúng lông sữa này là cô gái Lan này là anh uống một ngày này lon này uống bịt ngày tứ rồi nữa đâu thấy con hẳn phát triển mặc dù bị tật nhưng mà cái thể lực quán á cái thể khảm hoàn mình tứ giờ nữa vẫn cùng vợ chồng nữa vẫn cùng nuôi đâu cho ăn bột chứ sao nấu cháo đó nó sẵn ở trên nghiêng đó trên thì tập ăn lên rồi vẫn nuôi thì bắt đầu cái đời bảo chị người ta cũng lên có một số nơi
lúc
lại
đi ba
một tháng 17
chưa chắc vì khi là nghỉ coi là chúng biết thì biết nhưng mà một phần đôi lúc mình cũng nghỉ là theo cái đầu khổng của mình á đầu lương của mình là cũng nghỉ là một là có thể do chất độc da cam mà hai là có thể do là một cái hệ quả mà đó nhưng mà mình nghĩ là nếu như hệ quả thì mình liên hệ là trong cái dòng tộc của mình là không có ai bị hết nên từ chỗ đó là mình khẳng định người ta cũng cho biết như thế. Mà nhất là cái khi phẫu thuật cũ là cái phải đoan nó lâu về họ cũng khuyên ăn mình không nên sinh nở nữa vì sợ là cháu lần sau cũng sinh thêm nữa sợ ảnh không hoàn thiện á mà họ cũng trách nhiệm mình nhưng mà họ cũng cho biết là vừa biết bí là trong bí tại cả là họ giữ cái hạnh phúc á nên người ta nghĩ là nó chắc chắn là sinh nở nữa là sẽ không hoàn thành Thì từ chỗ đó là mình nghĩ là chắc chắn.
Khi đi học vậy khi đi học với con ở nhà
chăm sóc em là đâu thấy vất vả
không thấy vui hơn khi em đi học là chỗ mấy bữa tới ở nhà em hay cười vừa đi lên mà học đi học là đi chỗ em
Friendship Village outside of Hanoi was founded by an American veteran, George Meisel, who himself died of causes thought to be the result of exposure to Agent Orange. Many children with Agent Orange-related disabilities are taken care of here. Sewell Jones is also an American veteran of the Vietnam War, who is now the force behind this village.
I arrived in Vietnam in May of 68 and stayed here until June of 69. We were up on the, I was with 3rd Marine Division, and we spent all of our time along the DMZ, the parallel between the two countries. As luck would have it, I arrived at a time of probably the most intense fighting. We stayed in the bush all the time. We'd go out for 2 or 3 months at a time because I was what they call a Marine grunt or infantry unit. So we were just constantly out in the bush. The DMZ area, the Ashall Valley area, especially the Ashall, because that's where part of the Ho Chi Minh Trail went through, that was sprayed a great deal. Highway 9, which went across, was sprayed. So yeah, we were sprayed. We'd see the planes. We were sprayed quite often. We were always told that it was mosquito spray. And I'm sure the people who told us it was mosquito spray was told, and they didn't know either. I live in a cabin in Alaska, very small cabin, very isolated, 65 miles from the closest town. And I just realized I was spending all my time isolated and finally recognized that, you know, being in a depression, and here I was, you know, almost probably 50, 52, 53 years old. And I decided, you know, you have to do something. You can't just sit out here the rest of your life in a cabin. And I put myself into this program in Seattle. And after that, I started feeling fairly good. And I decided I was physically and mentally strong enough to come back and see Vietnam. And that's when I returned. During the war period, I realized I never saw Vietnam. I saw jungle trails. But I never saw the country. I never talked to, I don't ever remember talking to a Vietnamese, you know, or ever seeing one really, except at a distance. I realized, you know, I'd been over here fighting and knew absolutely nothing about this country. I'd never even talked to anybody from this country. And I finally said it was time for me to come back and know a little bit and find out what Vietnam was.
What was it like? What was your first reaction to a second time?
Well, I think any vet who comes back is fearful. We don't know how we're going to be received. I have a lot of guilt about Vietnam, and I have a lot of guilt about my country. So I was really very concerned about if I was going to be received well over here. I had no idea. But I just knew I had to go find out. We landed in Ho Chi Minh, Saigon, which I had never been to. But I was in my hotel room, and I said, okay, you didn't come to Vietnam to sit in your hotel. Go walk around the block one time and see what it's like. I was really scared. So I did. I finally got my courage, and I walked around the block. And the very first day, and this man, you know, a little bit younger than me, I find now it's very typical, came up to me and wanted to know how old I was, and if I was married, and asked me the basic questions. And finally he asked me, he says, have you ever been to Vietnam before? And I said, well, yeah, I was here in 1968. And I said, I was with 3rd Marines. And he looked at me and he pointed his finger at me and he said, well, you're the enemy, aren't you? And my heart kind of dropped. I really got scared and I said, yeah, I was the enemy. And he put his arms around me and gave me a big hug and he said, welcome to Vietnam. I've always been healthy. Of course, you don't know what's going on inside your body. But I was very angry. But what I was really angry about was I was talking with vets, American vets, who had children in the 70s being born without legs and arms. And the government was taking absolutely no responsibility. We're in the 3rd generation now. These are not children from the war. These are children 3 generations after the war. And they get no help because this government just don't have the money. And the U.S. is in denial. It makes you realize that war is not the end. They just go on and on and on. And that's why you don't have wars. There are some children, for instance, who are so mentally disabled. If we can teach them to stay clean, or to feed themselves, or to dress themselves, that's one thing we can do to help take some pressure off of the mother. There's very little we can do. My big goal, and we're working on it, is trying to make the friendship build as much self-funding as possible.
Sewell has begun a program to grow organic vegetables at the village. The children here are victims of exposure to chemicals, so they don't want to use chemical fertilizers. They hope in the future to be able to sell their produce to the people in the area and make some money for the village. 2 young people met at the village. Chong Van Hoa had severe leg problems. Gwen Tin Yan is deaf and mute. The 2 fell in love and married. They now have a perfectly healthy baby. They were taught to make artificial flowers at the village. Now they are living with her family, and they have taught them to make artificial flowers, which they sell in their village. This is a success story. Maybe it's only one, Sewell says, but it is one.
Oh, these are so beautiful.
Everyone touched by Agent Orange has had to learn to heal the wounds of war in his or her own way. Yet the depth of the trauma often requires help beyond what individuals can provide. The Vietnam Association for Victims of Agent Orange began legal action against the manufacturers of the defoliants used by U.S. forces during the war in January 2004. Nguyen Van Ki, who lives in Haiphong with his wife and 2 children, is one of the plaintiffs. As a North Vietnamese soldier, he was stationed in South Vietnam near the Ho Chi Minh Trail between 1972 and 1975. His son, Quan Thuong, was born in 1988 with spinal, limb, and developmental impairments. His daughter, Chi Thuy Nga, was born 1 year later, developmentally disabled, deaf, and dumb. Kui himself was diagnosed with stomach and liver cancer, and recently with lung cancer.
Dioxin is an environmental hormone, that's how it's classified these days, that truly, truly screws up human beings and animal life in general, but particularly human beings. And it comes, you don't have to be sprayed by the American Air Force, it comes from a lot of other sources. And in an attempt to find out more about it and to work out whether there could be some antidotes that could be used or how to cut down on it, the place to do the research is Vietnam. And of course it's the one place that America won't go near. That's the place that holds the answers because of this group that wasn't sprayed and the group that was sprayed and the difference between them, and the difference is those the answers are to be found in Vietnam. But for political reasons, and only political reasons, the Americans won't go there to do that research. Because if they did the research, they would have to pay compensation, and that would, as it were, prove guilt.
When the spraying of Agent Orange was suspended in April of 1970, the U.S. Air Force had an inventory of 1.37 million gallons of the herbicide in South Vietnam. In an operation named Pesa Ho, all of it was transferred to Johnston Island in the South Pacific in 1972. After sitting in storage for 5 years, the Agent Orange was transferred from old corroding drums into new ones, and then destroyed aboard the Dutch incinerator ship Vulcanus in 1977. The United States Air Force was required by the Environmental Protection Agency to research the environmental impact and impose strict safety measures on this procedure. Though some of the defoliants were disposed of in this way, the dioxin left in the soil of Vietnam is still very much in existence. It is affecting 3 to 4 million people in Vietnam even today.
Also, we were young at the time of the 1968, 69, 70 revolution, of youth revolution, where people were actually fighting against the older generation. Now you have people involved with video games and fighting imaginary foes, but you don't have people actually looking at politicians and the environment and fighting that. So they've been diverted into a whole other virtual reality rather than real reality, and it's very difficult to get a bunch of 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds to say, well, hey, you know, there are things going on in our society that are really, really wrong, and why don't we get them to see it? Virtual reality is being sold as the way to be and be cool. I'm cool because I have the best virtual reality thing in the world. But nobody looks at the reality around them, the rivers, the mountains, the streams, the air. They don't consider that this is being destroyed. But you know, you make a little mark, who knows, maybe something changes, maybe it doesn't, I don't know.
Where have all the soldiers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the soldiers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the soldiers gone? Gone to graveyards, everyone. Oh, when will they ever learn? Oh, when will they ever learn?
Where have all the graveyards gone? Long time passing. Where have all the graveyards gone? Long time ago.
Shortly before Greg became fatally ill, as we were turning off our reading lights one night, he said, "You know, I think the universe is like a whole big organism. We are like little molecules. We come and go." I agreed and we went to sleep. After he passed away, I constantly asked myself, where did Greg go? Then in time, I came to realize that he did not go anywhere, for where could he have gone? All is connected. We are all part of one big thing, whatever we choose to call it. We may be helpless little creatures in the scheme of the big thing, but we are endowed with immense power once we come to recognize how we, human beings, are all we have for each other. Somewhere deep in the soil, a seed of hope is starting to germinate. A seed that has to be nurtured carefully, for it is ever so frail.
I think I need a strong drink. A bit lost for words. Masako, would you like? I don't know. Have you got anything prepared or?
Not much.
Okay. All right. Well, that was not easy to digest, I think. What came of that film? I mean, in the years, I mean, the film was released in 2007, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the most important thing, as far as I am concerned, most important thing for me personally was that it gave me power to go on after I lost my husband. And you know, that's why I'm here now. Without it, I don't know what I would have done. Right. And I haven't seen this film for some time. And in seeing it again, I think again how much power I was given by the victims of Agent Orange. In, you know, I was remembering from each scene that how I felt while I was there and photographing, and my emotions at each moment came back to me, and I realized that I was really, really helped by making this film to go on.
Mm.
So that's one thing that came about, and you know, it's I was in my mid-50s when I started this film. I had never had any experience in making documentary.
Right.
And it was just because I was so lost with the sudden loss of my husband. And I had to do something. I had to know what Agent Orange was all about. And it happened that I was an exchange student in the state of Maine in the 60s. And Greg and I used to go for summer vacations to Maine, and after he died, we brought his ashes to one of the lakes to spread. And I learned that there was a small workshop to teach how to make documentary film to an entire somebody who's totally new in the field. It was a course of 2 weeks, and I decided to take it. And I had never even touched a camera. And I learned how to use the camera, and I learned how to edit a movie on computer in these 2 weeks. And I asked Philip to go with me to Vietnam. And in the 1980s and 1960s, we heard a little bit about Agent Orange because it became news around that time. But I had forgotten, you know, I thought it was all over. And everything was taken care of, and nothing was happening. But when Philip told me that Greg's death was maybe because, but Philip was very sure that it was because of Agent Orange, I was a bit doubtful. You know, how can it go on 35 years after it was sprayed? But the more I visit Vietnam, and the more I get to know people, both in Vietnam and U.S., the more convinced I became about the fact that it is because of Agent Orange.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I must say, I mean, I was really not aware of that. This, I mean, for me, that was an issue of the past as well. I mean, of the Vietnam War and the aftermath. But I had not realized that this is still such a current. And people are still so much affected by the effect of that.
Yeah, and the American government, the strange thing is in 1991, America passed the, under Clinton, they made Agent Orange Act, and they decided to help Vietnam veterans, American Vietnam veterans. And if you are sick with 17 kinds of cancers, and if you had ever been to Vietnam during the wartime, you are regarded as a victim of Agent Orange, while America is still denying any relationship of health and Agent Orange in Vietnam. So there's a discrepancy there. And last year, they started to clean up some of the hot spots, which there are 28 of them still, mainly at a former American air base. But they're still denying the relationship between Agent Orange and health effects.
So there's still no help for the victims?
No help, but Americans say, you know, we're nice people, we help you you know, because we are charitable.
Right.
So that's the attitude today. Mm.
Hi, Dr. Rogers. Can I ask, do you know if the same sort of abnormalities in children are being found in Bhopal in India, where they have the dioxin?
Bhopal? Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's the same kind, but people in Bhopal are still suffering.
I know that. I'm just wondering whether it was the same, similar sort of abnormalities in the children.
I don't know if it's the similar kind. Not many, not much is reported, is there? And of course, you know, many of the deformities that are found in Vietnam, there's no proof that it is related to Agent Orange. They just Vietnamese Association of Victims Agent Orange. They check. They have now. Well, I have to say, in the past 8 years since I started to film this, there have been quite an improvement in the organization in Vietnam, and they have established 50 chapters in almost in each province, and it's checking through the people's committees' help, etc., who's sick and what the family history is. And if any of the parents were in the directly spread area or were deployed during the war, any deformities in children are regarded, considered to be the results of Agent Orange. And they do offer, the government, Vietnamese government, do offer support to those children.
Some years ago in the late 90s, we visited Tudu Hospital. We visited Tudu Hospital and actually met that very wonderful doctor that you have in your film.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I found very strange, because he would come back and tell me what he'd done today, all the women, pregnant women, had scans. Now that was way back when they didn't, all the rubber gloves in theatre were washed, autoclaved and reused, needles, everything. They didn't have money to buy stuff, so they reused them all. But every woman had a scan.
Had what?
A scan.
An ultrasound
scan.
Yeah, okay.
And they would be doing up to 500 scans a day on all the women in that provinces around Ho Chi Minh. Mm-hmm. And now we know why. They had rusty old scanning machines and doctors piling them in and in and out, in and out, in and out. Whereas, say in Hong Kong, you'd only be given an ultrasound scan if there was a fear there was something wrong. You certainly wouldn't be doing 500 a day. And this must have been why, with this lovely lady that you worked with, that you did your program with. Yes, so there. They already knew lots already back then.
Yes, well, the ultrasound checking is very important in Vietnam. So I asked them how much they find, how many abortions there are, and you know, I could not get the clear answer. But often, I made a sequel of this film, and in that, the doctors at Tudu Hospital explains that it is left up to the mother. But actually, the question was raised by an American daughter of Vietnam veteran who was born without a leg and without missing some fingers. She asked the question, saying that mothers decide not to have children because of ultrasound, I would not have been here. And then the doctor said, we would not recommend abortion if it was like missing limbs. We only try to abort if it was a major defects like cerebral defects. But I don't know how they can tell.
Thanks. thank you so much for sharing your story.
You said you made a sequel, and I'm just wondering if you could share a little bit of an update with us of what happened since you made this film to the people you profiled, and also just any major developments in their cases.
Yes, I went back to and visited the same people 4 years afterwards for the sequel, and the situation is in many cases more severe. Like the boy with the two heads, he's bigger, he's very heavy, and before the mother could carry, but now it takes the whole family of four to carry him, and his deformities are even more severe. But the good news is that the little girl who wanted to become a teacher or doctor, she's actually studying to become a doctor because, you know, she wants to help his her brother. That's the good news. And but in many cases, the situation is getting worse. Although the Vietnamese government is trying to do more. Yeah, well, there's more to be said about that, but I don't know where to begin.
Thank you. Well, I want to compliment you on the great courage that you must have taken to decide to make this film and a sequel.
Thank you.
My question is, you must have rattled quite a few official cages with publicizing the extent of the current still damages and deformities that human beings suffer from Agent Orange. Have you had any problems, threats, you know, obstacles put in your path in publicizing all this information? Because you're dealing with some major chemical companies and the US government.
No, nothing. No, no, I don't think chemical companies don't even bother to watch it. If I sent it to them, they wouldn't watch it. They just, you know, they just brush it away. So I haven't really had any obstacles. And for one thing, it wasn't seen in America much. It was bought by American university libraries, but the public TV and, you know, public theaters just wouldn't show it. It had a pretty good reception in Russia and in France and some European countries, but America just refuses to deal with that. And that makes me think of this new trend, which is like, this is 50th anniversary of the beginning of Vietnam War. I don't know from which date they're counting, but there seems to be reconsideration of the war now, and there seems to be a trend to justify that it was the right war, and some of the Vietnam veterans are trying to fight against it. So, and mostly this was shown in Japan, and in Japan, Japanese are very sympathetic to Vietnamese, and so there hasn't been any obstacles as such.
No problems with Freedom of Information Act to get the bombing patterns or the spraying patterns? Did you have any obstacles to...
No, no, not at all. No.
Are you aware of any...
Thank you very much for sharing the film. Are you aware of any new sources of contamination since investigating this or in the last 4 years?
Yeah, well, not new sources, but...
genetic mutation, I suppose, isn't it?
Not new sources, because it all happened before. Now we're seeing the results. So one of the things that I wanted to follow for my sequel was what happened to Tittabawassee River in Michigan, where Dow Chemical is. And there had been, it was discovered in the past few years that the whole river has been contaminated because Dow Chemicals was releasing the Agent Orange in the river, and the houses along the river has been contaminated, and you know they are having cancers and problems. So that's one of the things I wanted to do. And of course, I asked Dow Chemicals if they would accept me my interview. They said no. And then I wanted to combine the fact that the problem is still happening in US as well as in Vietnam. And I did some comparative stories. But in the end, you know, what's happening in Vietnam is so much larger than what is happening to the residents of the along the river of Tetabawa Sea. So we had to cut it out. So it became more of the Vietnamese story. So in terms of what's happening, in the hot spots in Vietnam, hot spots are like Bien Hoa and Da Nang and Phuket, those old air bases where they loaded and stored Agent Orange. The waters and the soil is still contaminated, so people living around there are getting contamination even now. Is that what you meant by
yes.
New source? Yes. Old source, but new contamination. Yeah.
How much cash have the Americans devoted to cleaning up those hot spots? Is it 28 hot spots?
How much? Three. I'm very bad with figures.
It's
how much they spent in Iraq in a day. Something like that.
As an American who was eligible for the draft in 1971 and managed to avoid it by the lottery, this film touched me very deeply. And I know Vietnam is a big producer of seafood, fish, shrimp. I've been concerned for years about the runoff, whether the seas around Vietnam are tested for dioxin, if it's poisoning the seafood that they're producing.
Yeah, it has been tested for a long time, and it's all clear. And Vietnam, most of the dioxin has been washed away from the land of Vietnam, except for those 28 hot spots, and by rain, because it rains a lot over there. And Vietnamese government were especially concerned because of the shrimp export. So it was tested like in the 90s, and you know they said it was all clear. And that's one of the reasons why Vietnamese did not make such a big deal out of it, because they didn't want Americans think that it's still contaminated. But now it's safe, they say.
One good thing to know.
Yeah, Vietnamese shrimps are good.
Is there a half-life for dioxin, like nuclear waste? Is there a half-life?
No, it doesn't go away. It doesn't go away.
Persistence.
It doesn't go away. It just gets washed away.
It's washing away.
That's what I understand.
Goes elsewhere,
which is pretty similar
to the Philippines.
Maybe. Yeah.
How many? I mean, are there any official figures of how many families are affected by?
People? Vietnamese, 3 to 4 million.
Yeah, who was. Somehow in contact with Agent Orange. Mm. But I mean, how many families actually are feeling the effects, the direct effects by deformities?
Children.
Yeah, children.
Well, the figure I heard was 700,000, according to Vietnamese Association of Victims of Agent Orange, which is usually called VAVA. And I would like to mention that that we started, after showing this film in Japan at theaters and at various gatherings, we collected quite a lot of donations, And with that seed money, we started a scholarship program called Seed of Hope. And we decided to call it Seed of Hope because at the end of the film, I said, you know, deep in the soil, there's some hope of seed of hope, maybe germinating. And we have to nurture it very carefully because it's very frail. When I said that, I wasn't really sure that there is hope. But by saying that there is hope, I thought maybe I can really believe it. But now that I started the scholarship and calling it Seed of Hope, I feel more strongly that there is hope when we decide to help each other, because that's all we have. And we are now helping 60 children between 13 to 15 of Vietnam who have been affected by Agent Orange to go to school for 3 years so that they can learn, they can go to vocational school, high school, so that at least they can be a little independent of the family and do their own thing. So that's a little bit of hope.
Mm. And do you have, we have some leaflets
in the front. Yes, I have brochure.
Yeah. So if you're interested, there's some leaflets at the front table you can pick up to learn a bit more about that initiative.
Do you know if it's at all on the agenda of U.S. Diplomats in Vietnam or in Washington to address this issue, to improve relations with Vietnam? Have you met any diplomats who are...
From my impression, from what I hear from Americans living in Vietnam, is that they try not to address it. Yeah, they try to avoid answering directly to the questions. And they are not unwilling to help monetarily, but they just don't want to admit that they're culpable of anything, any wrongdoing.
For the liability.
Liability. It's, you know, if they can admit that it affects Vietnam veterans of American soldiers, how can they deny that it has nothing to do with Vietnam? Yeah.
Well.
Thank you very much. And I want to say one thing, because my husband used to stop in Hong Kong many times.
At FCC.
So this show screening has a very deep meaning for me. And I think if he knew that this was happening, he would be very appreciative. Robin, Bob, and all the friends who are here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. A little gift from the FCC.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you everybody for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night.